The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
This episode is brought to you by AutoTrader. Look around. What do you see? Cars. Lots of them. And guess what? They're probably on AutoTrader. Whether you're into timeless classics or the latest trends, if you see it on the road, you can likely find it on AutoTrader. New, used, electric, and one day, maybe even flying cars. See a car? Find it on AutoTrader. Visit AutoTrader.com to learn more.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Eben Novy-Williams, and this is the U.S. military's takeover of college athletics sports business podcast, The Sportacast.
You and one Daniel Libet have spent quite a many months checking into this story, and I'll just give the gist and then I'll turn the microphone over to you. But in short, at a time of great upheaval in college sports, and as we saw Mark Emmert, by the way, departing the NCAA, a time of great change and upheaval, the U.S. military is looking to insert itself into athletic promotion by giving scholarships to athletes in the non-revenue sports, that's basketball and football aside, everything else, swimming, track and field. They're looking to give scholarships, like tens of thousands of scholarships, in return for, of course, military service after school. Now you fill in the blanks.
Yeah, this is, Scott, as you mentioned, something that we've been working on for a few months now. The idea here came from a Air Force contractor back in September who wrote a brief that was then circulated to a number of high-ranking military officials, members of Congress, some senators, other members of the Department of Transportation and the intelligence communities. And as you said, the idea here is there's two big problems that they're looking to solve. One being internal within the military. They're struggling with their recruiting. They bring a lot of people to basic training that physically can't pass it. They obviously look at college sports and they say, oh, that's a tasty demographic of the type of people that we would love to have in our service moving forward. And the second issue problem being in college sports, COVID exacerbated a lot of financial problems. And as the rich keep getting richer, more and more schools are confronting the idea that they may have to change big things about their programs. And we've seen almost 300 programs cut in the past 2 years. Those are varsity programs in across all divisions of NCAA for schools that have said, look, we don't want to, these programs aren't making us money and we don't want to fund them anymore. So this defense contractor essentially looked at those two things. Military's recruiting is not so good. College sports is struggling to fund their programs. And he said, look, we can solve both these problems maybe in one swoop. The military could divert a lot of the billions, Scott, that they're spending on recruiting, spend some of that to fund athletic scholarships for entire teams in college sports, make those scholarships contingent on the athletes serving a certain amount of time after they're done with school, and maybe we've solved both of these problems. This is a fairly shocking idea, Scott, that obviously is a long shot to happen for a number of reasons. But it was fascinating in the reporting to see just how deep into the Department of Defense and how high up into Congress these conversations have already gotten.
All right. My knee-jerk reaction was, do these athletes want to sign on and find themselves on the front lines right away? And you said, no, that's not the case. That's not what the plan would be.
Part of the pitch here is that the military wants to destigmatize and change the conversation about what it means to join the military. And a lot of the recruiting here would be you're not getting a helmet and a gun and being shipped out to the front line somewhere. You will be doing the same kind of work that you might be doing in the private sector, depending on what you're interested in. So if you're an electrical engineer, we can use that in the military. If you're a computer programmer or a coder, we can use that in the military. These are jobs like logistics specialists and engineers and things like that. So again, the allure here from the military, certainly the idea of having a very set probably highly qualified, both physically and mentally, group of people that joined the service, and also maybe a way to change the conversation happening nationally around what it means to join up with the military and what it means to do service in that regard after you're done with school.
One of the bonuses of having sat next to you for how long has it been now? I don't even know. How long have I sat next to you? More than a decade.
A decade, yeah, more.
Okay, I hear your phone calls, you hear my phone calls, and sometimes I'm chuckling because I kind of know who you're talking to and you know who I'm talking to, and you just, it's kind of funny. I know where you're headed and what you're going to say next simply by hearing one part of the conversation. But from some of your conversations on this, I can hear that you were expecting more naysayers. You were expecting more people to shoot holes in this plan. This won't work because of X, Y, you know, A, B, C, all the way down to Z. But you kept finding people who were saying, nah, this is viable. I mean, it could, it works under our rules, or this could work. So you said before, unlikely to happen. I'm curious, what are those top two or three reasons that would make it unlikely to happen?
There's a few things here. One, the proposal suggests that that by using Department of Defense money, schools can offer essentially unlimited scholarships to fill entire teams. And as you know, Scott, the NCAA has very strict limits on how many scholarships you can offer. The average D1 men's lacrosse team is almost 50 players. Schools are only allowed to offer 12.6 scholarships. So most athletes on a men's Division I lacrosse team are either getting a very small amount of scholarship money or no scholarship money at all. Part of the pitch here was that the military could come to these schools and say, hey, Johns Hopkins, you now have the money to offer 50 scholarships. You can put the entire team on scholarship.
What about this, though? Let me jump in. What about that? And I'm just getting creative, because we all know the federal government backs student loans. So this is in essence, you know, Uncle Sam is the U.S. government. What if it was I'll give you X 0% loan that should you complete whatever we're asking for, we will forgive the loan. Almost like going, you see the teachers that go to small towns, right?
Yeah.
So what if they said, all right, we will front the money. And in some cases, depending on how you proceed, you have to pay it back at 0%, or we're willing to forgive the loan if you do fulfill certain protocols.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I think the goal here, it has to be as easy and as alluring as a current athletic scholarship is. And right now, I think the way they're thinking about it, it is. It's just a matter of, I like you're thinking outside the box. Yeah,
well,
it's just a
matter of outside the box. Hey, hold on now.
This whole plan is outside the box.
We are in the NIL era right now. What if I just want to say, to represent the U.S. government and the military, I want to pay your tuition?
That's fine. Done, again, right? And that's one of the interesting things. I think maybe a couple of those conversations that you're alluding to me on the phone, I talked to a number of people and kind of scoured the NCAA rule book myself to get a sense of, what would the NCAA say about a plan like this?
Oh, is there anything more unappealing than the sentence of, I just scoured the NCAA rule book?
It's dense. I understand why they're trying to condense it. And the truth is, Scott, is that there's nothing outside of scholarship limits. I don't think there's much in this idea that the NCAA would immediately balk at. We have Division I institutions like Army and Navy that have athletes across campus that are already committing to doing 8 years of service when they're done being a college athlete. We have ROTC on campus, where there are tons of varsity athletes right now that are currently also simultaneously in training to be commissioned officers when they graduate. And we also have a ton of scholarships that are endowed. So we have donors, rich people out there who call up the local AD and say, hey, I want to endow 5 women's basketball scholarships, and then those become funded by somebody else, an athletic scholarship funded by not the university directly, but vis-a-vis that arrangement. So in some ways, there's some parts of this plan that are actually not that abnormal, in that we have a lot of college athletes right now who are committing to serve in the military moving forward. And then in other ways, when you think about the scale here, that's when I think this becomes such a pie in the sky idea. You're talking about tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of athletes each year. You're talking about entire programs that are turning their athletic department over into essentially a recruiting vessel for the government. I think there's really interesting ways in which this idea could be morphed into a much smaller adaptation and maybe tried that way. But when you're talking about every college athletic program that is not a football or a basketball program at every school at every level across the country, then you start to realize, yeah, I'm not convinced that schools are going to be up for this. And then the last piece there, are kids also going to be? Do people want to play college tennis so badly that they're, if the only option is this, are they willing to do that? I think there's obviously a lot of unanswered questions here that would need to be answered in a much deeper way if any of this were to become serious.
All I know is we have wealthy people in this country who are feigning resumes, athletic resumes for their kids so that they can go to particular institutions and get in. You know, nope, never really played volleyball, but yep, highly recruited volleyball player, right? So if that's what, you know, if people are willing to do that, whether it's the parents or the kids, what are they willing to do to play Division One, whatever, athletics? I don't think we've seen the limits on that yet. And we'll get to Mark Emmert in a minute. But also coming on, this all comes, by the way, as you know, we heard Jack Swarbrick, the AD at Notre Dame, come out and say, yeah, he sees this great change coming in college sports, like a separation of the top tier of college sports. So I'm not sure anybody doesn't want everything on the table. Who knows what? We've asked ADs, we've asked NCAA folks about sort of the privatization of the top level, whether it be private equity groups come in and privatize the top level of college sports and really just look to push the profit angle of it all. And people say, yeah, I could see that happening. You know, if we had Bain Capital looking to buy the NHL, low those many years ago, why not the top level of college athletics?
It's funny that you mentioned Jack, because I talked to Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, for this story, and I thought this was a great line. At one point, he was like, is this the craziest idea I've ever heard? No, I work in college sports. Absolutely not, which I thought was funny. And you're right. The entire NCAA business model is changing so much now. It seems like every day there's something new happening. I'm getting whiplash just keeping track of it. One of the big things that the NCAA, Mark Emmert, who we'll get to in a second, a lot of powerful ADs, a lot of them are lobbying for the federal government to step in here. Yeah. And to be clear, this scholarship program is not what they mean by that. They want an antitrust exemption, maybe to make some concessions in a way of getting some kind of legal protection from Congress. But you're right in that everything is changing right now for college sports. Nobody knows what top tier, mid tier, or lower tier college sports is going to look like in 5 years. And as a result, I talked to a lot of people for this story who all said exactly what you said, Scott. You know, there could be a crisis moment in college sports where this becomes an option that people want to take seriously. We're maybe not there yet, but call me back in 6 months or call me back in a year and we'll see where we are, because nobody in college sports understands where they're going to fit in this landscape in 5 years or maybe even 2 years.
Well, my father was an Army guy, and let me think, my focus group of one is coming up on 13. So 4 years from now, when schools maybe are looking at him, if it's what he wants to do and play a little college hockey, you know, let's see who I believe, and I'm giving them a recruiting advantage right now. I shouldn't do this, but he did say to me, all right, Dad, what's the best school and best hockey team combination in Division I college hockey? That Princeton was the question for me. So you're a little bit biased there. you know, he has worked with Zane Colombo, who, as you know, also works with Princeton University.
Princeton hockey, but great.
I'm sorry. I did not say Princeton. Can you guess what I did tell him?
I am going to guess that you said, I mean, recently, it's hard to argue with Yale. Boston College, I would think, would be high up there, too.
Wow, how angry.
Michigan?
Michigan's very good, yeah. But how angry. You just mentioned Yale and left off the rival.
Oh, Harvard?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Yale's been better in the past decade than Harvard. I'm not that sure about that.
Well, I said Harvard.
Yale's won a national championship recently.
Yeah, yes, but I said Harvard if only because, I don't know, I kind of like the area of campus and whatever. If I'm going to New Haven, I'm just getting pizza, right? So, you know, hey, Harvard, just letting you know, I know you don't give out athletic scholarships. It's just financial aid, but who knows where we're going. So if in 4 years you need a goaltender with a funny personality, I'll tell you, who's very good at sending out Family Guy clips on all of the social media, I got one for you. And all you have to do is pay I don't know, whatever the 4 years cost. So
all of it.
Yeah, that's it. Whatever. All you do have to pay is everything. Other than that, we're good. I'll pick up books. How about that? I'm fair. All right. So tell me about Mark Emmert. Surprising announcement the other day, Eben. He is stepping down as the head of the NCAA. I don't see how anybody could be surprised, because that job right now, you said you have whiplash. I mean, his head must explode every day trying to figure out how do I wrap my arms around these institutions? Like one institution doesn't want to do what the other is doing. One level, it doesn't equate to the other level. Almost impossible to figure out how to govern this thing right now. You have no idea where it's going.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not a huge surprise. He has 3 years left on his contract. He will not be serving that out. I think it's hard to argue, Scott, that Mark has done an incredibly good job here. The NCAA has lost repeatedly at various levels of legal litigation, including at the highest level at the Supreme Court. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the NCAA kind of lost control of college sports in the past 12 months. The NIL has kind of run away from them. The NCAA had a chance to kind of put their stamp on a national framework. They decided not to do that. There's so much, as we said, that's changing right now. And the official kind of response from the NCAA most recently has been kind of throwing its hands up in the air. They ratified that new constitution that will give individual divisions and maybe even conferences a lot of their own autonomy for rulemaking, for rule enforcement. I think the NCAA is trying to reexamine where it's going to fit into whatever college sports settles into in the next few years. And it seems very clear that the organization both wants to and probably should do that under new leadership. And again, they said this was a mutual decision. I'm sure that Mark Emmert, who's been in the position for a little over a decade, I'm sure he also understood that as well. I will be fascinated, Scott, to see who they start interviewing for this job, who wants this job, because right now, as we've been discussing, you have no idea what this job could be. The most powerful person in college sports, as it's been for a long time.
Show me the pay package and you'll find plenty of people willing to put up with the headache.
Sure.
Yeah, yes, show me the pay package.
Yes, the pay package is going to be good. I think Mark was making $2.5 million last year. But again, could be a really prominent position in this billion-dollar industry. And there's also a situation in which it becomes kind of a toothless, not powerful person in this industry.
Let me ask you this right now. Right now, who is more powerful? Mark Emmert or the next Mark Emmert? Or the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey?
It's Greg Sankey, I think, without question. And I think that's, again, because of the way in which in the past couple of years, the NCAA has repeatedly said, we're going to defer to the conferences and the divisions. We'll let you guys do your own thing. We are now very close to both the SEC and the Big Ten, both of them having more annual revenue than the NCAA is. The NCAA does not control the football postseason in any capacity. And as you know, Scott, that's the biggest moneymaker there is in college sports. Those conferences are going to be richer than the NCAA, and they're increasingly getting the ability to kind of set their own rules. So I think you can make an easy argument that both Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren are right now more powerful than Mark Emmert is and will be more powerful than his successor is. And again, I think that's the trend we're seeing from the NCAA. They have tried for decades and decades now to rule Alabama in the same way they rule Alabama State. And it's kind of always been a fool's errand, but I think the model finally cracked this year. And again, I think it's a very tough job to step into, not just because you don't know where college sports is going. You just don't know where the NCAA is going within that bigger question.
Well, they'd be wise, whoever the new person is, come on in and hire a chief Twitter expert. No better way of disseminating your side, if Twitter has become sort of the global meeting room, right? And news, of course, Elon Musk made a bid to buy Twitter. Let's see if he can consummate the deal here. But Twitter sports is a real thing, right? NBA Twitter, like Twitter sports is a real thing. And I'm just wondering, and this is just you and I spitballing here, what's the change to sport, if anything, with Elon Musk taking over Twitter? He said, free speech. He has done things on Twitter to sort of go at critics and opponents in the past. I don't know. I have zero idea if Elon Musk is a sports fan. I have no idea. But, any change you see or...
If he wants the Broncos, it's his.
Whoa. I'd like to see Rob Walton and Elon Musk go at it. I understand like Elon on the rankings list comes out a little higher.
Just a bit higher, yeah.
But wouldn't it be great to have Rob Walton say, I'm putting a group together. Right,
so funny
that just the family. We're getting the whole Walton family together to see if we can bid on the Broncos. But I'm just curious. Anything you see? We've lightly bandied this about, but you know, folks inside the company are waiting to see what happens next. What do we do? What's going to happen? And I'm just curious, does anything happen for sports?
It's literally the question you're asking is the $44 billion question here. And I think it's such a great one. There are people much smarter than me that can probably answer that better. I have been trying personally to kind of separate my feelings for kind of the way in which this happened from my thoughts on the way in which my Twitter experience and the Twitter experience for our industry changes. And on that second thing, I have no idea. My general feeling towards sports is that, barring just a few small exceptions, sports is a business. It's in many ways very corporate. A lot of people are very cautious when it comes to social media. I don't think of too much on this that we see on the sports side as being the types of things that are kind of on the fringes of content moderation, which Elon has talked a lot about, on the fringes of being banned, being blocked, et cetera. So in some ways, I think that our industry, the sports side of Twitter, is maybe one of the least likely to change a lot, but I am certainly open to any interpretation or anyone's thoughts that think that I am underthinking that or overthinking that. And maybe there's something dramatic in what Elon is proposing or what he may do that actually may fundamentally change things.
All right, here's the absolute truth, because you know I always tell you the truth. I know you were just talking for like a minute. I have no idea what you said.
I'll tweet about it later.
Well, okay, good. Yeah, in fact, I'll see it there. I was looking at our fourth segment here because we have been, I don't know, for the past few months, been cross-promoting and utilizing some of the editorial from one of our sister brands, Dirt.com. And Dirt pretty much covers the real estate market. And one of these subsections is athletes. So we've been putting out these athletes buying and selling homes. And man, oh man, I got to say, people love these stories.
They're so popular.
Yeah, they absolutely. and I get it. It's just sort of like, you know, the opulence of like Russell Wilson's. You and I had the same reaction. He sold whatever this 18. What I really don't remember Russell's number, but whatever the house he sold, some crazy house in Seattle.
Yeah.
And you and I both had the same reaction. We did not give one iota about the 10, 12, 15,000 square foot house. It was the tree house. He had this, the best looking treehouse. And you even said, I'm happy to trade my one bedroom Manhattan apartment for the treehouse.
Yeah, I'm giving a smaller apartment for a waterfront treehouse in on the Puget Sound.
But we also noticed a little trend here that the Los Angeles Rams keep popping up. Like we have Aaron Donald buying a $17 million California home. We had stories about what Sean McVay, the coach, Matthew Stafford, the quarterback, Cooper Kupp, the Super Bowl MVP wide receiver.
Yeah.
OBJ. Yeah. That's, I mean, what's my favorite? I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm looking through all the notes. Like, so Sean McVay, 14 million, 9,000 square foot mansion. Okay. Matthew Stafford, of course, had $160 million contract. He bought a $20 million house. And then here's my favorite, Matt Stafford, which tells me that he's a real estate investor. He's not just buying a house. Matt Stafford bought two side-by-side homes from Drake, right? He spent $11 million on the side-by-sides by Drake. Now, is he going to like combine them? Is he renting them out separately? Is he going to refurbish? What's he doing? What's Matthew Stafford doing with these homes? Cooper Kupp, two homes, one in LA, one in Oregon, $6.5 million total. But here, this is the part I love, where I know these are real estate investors. He is asking, he bought it a year ago. So now he's selling the LA home, asking $6 million. $2 million more than he paid a year ago.
Not
like
bad.
I know real estate appreciation is good. Interest rates were really low. It's starting to creep up. But is he making $2 million profit on a home he bought a year ago?
It's fascinated by this. It's the home where a Super Bowl champion slept. That's got to add some value to it. Scott, by the way, I love that a couple episodes ago, you were lamenting the fact that you don't take notes for the podcast. And then you came prepared with detailed real estate listings.
This was impossible for me.
Los Angeles Rams.
What kind of mess would this have been if I tried to, by memory, go by what the LA Rams have done in the real estate market recently? Yeah. And by the way, like I'm showing you the page now on our little camera.
Man comes prepared, does his show notes.
It is not even, but it's not prepared well here. It's like I'm scanning both pages. I have some written on one page, some on the other. But I can't tell you how popular this stuff is. And when we talk to people like Ndamukong Suh and A-Rod about all the business beyond the game and the things they're doing, I don't think we've heard tech investor, right? We hear a lot of tech. We've heard of like equity in these startups. We haven't heard too much about the prominent real estate investors, you know, at least on the home fronts, you know, on the personal home. They need to know things like kind exchange. You know, do you know this? Do you know what you can capital gains? You know what you're allowed? Single 250,000, married 500,000. You know, do you know about a 1031, Evan? I know you own your apartment.
Yeah, the multi-billion dollar housing market is not something that I am that I'm all too familiar with, to be honest.
Well, the next time we are hanging with any of the Rams, and you know, we had our Super Bowl event with the Rams, and you know, Kevin Demuff was there, the CEO. I'm going to ask them, say, hey, is this something these guys talk about that you're aware of, that they go into? Do they share a broker, and which is, do they talk about how we're going to go about this? What's the smart way to go about this? Because I don't want to talk to, you know, Matt Stafford about his new commercial or what the play on the field. I want to talk to him about 1031 like-kind exchanges and see if he's used it yet.
There you go. One thing that jumped out to me, Scott, you mentioned that Russell Wilson and his wife Sierra sold their place in Seattle. They bought a place in Denver. I don't know if you caught this in the posting we did. They bought a 20,000 square foot place in Colorado. How many bedrooms do you think are in the 20,000 square foot place? That
unfair. You obviously don't remember, but you mentioned it to me.
No, I did. Okay.
Yeah. So it's way low.
It's four. Yeah. It's four, but there's 12 bathrooms. There's four bedrooms. And I don't know if they have kids. I don't know what the situation is there. I was reading this thing expecting there to be like 25 bedrooms in this place. And then it was four.
Please, but no treehouse. Once you've had the opulence of a treehouse, you have to build another one.
Yeah, so soon to be five.
All right. That is Eben Novi Williams on the Twitter at Novi_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. Our digital media editor is Cora Veltman. Thank you very much for all you do, Cora. She reminds you that the show can be found at Sportacast, which is the hub of what will soon become the Sportacast Media Network.